This is the Breaker.News podcast for June 3rd, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, a special edition of Around the Rim and Cascadia Calling, news headlines about the anniversary of the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre, the big deal feature, political data mining whistleblower Christopher Wiley testifies to a Canadian House of Commons committee on the Facebook scandal. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did Justin Trudeau's Trans Rockies tar sands tube and terminal takeover bring him one step closer to being a one-term wonder as Prime Minister? Yes, the Trudeau Mountain Pipeline, brought to you by Kinder Morneau. It'll cost taxpayers just $4.5 billion, they say, a bargain. But they wouldn't offer an estimate on the cost to actually expand the pipeline. By the time this is all over, will it be $10 billion on taxpayer shoulders or $15 billion in taxpayer shoulders? Will anyone actually buy this before it gets worse? Trudeau alienated those on the left who oppose the pipeline for climate change fears. He alienated those on the right who fear ballooning federal debt and higher taxes. Kinder Morgan won't be gone from Canada. It'll still operate the Vancouver Wharves and the YVR jet fuel pipeline, among other assets. On May 28th, the board of Kinder Morgan awarded $1.5 million bonuses to executives Ian Anderson and David Savary, should they stay until July 2020. But that October 21st, 2019 federal election can't come soon enough for supporters of the federal NDP and conservatives. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time for a special edition of Around the Rim and Cascadia Calling to commemorate the anniversary of the June 4th, 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre. In The Express, Justin Stoneman and Lucy Johnston report, BBC legend Kate Eady was hit by Chinese bullet in Beijing massacre, but kept quiet. In a powerful new documentary, the 72-year-old reporter reveals how she narrowly escaped being shot as the army fired on thousands of demonstrating students on June 4th, 1989. Ms. Eady and her cameraman were among the first to report on the true horror of the unfolding tragedy in Beijing. During one volley of gunfire, Ms. Eady was injured by a bullet which shaved the skin off her arm. Speaking about the atrocities she witnessed, Ms. Eady said, "I could see soldiers on the lorries firing. I turned to the cameraman and said, 'We've probably gone past the point where it's too dangerous to stay.'" The brutal protest, which resulted in as many as 10,000 deaths, was later described as the greatest challenge to the communist state in China since the 1949 revolution. "Every school child is taught that the army loves the people," Eady said. "They just could not get their heads around the fact that the army was shooting at them." In the South China Morning Post, Jeffy Lam reports, "Hong Kong's leftover Tiananmen activists face cynicism, powerlessness, and growing resignation that 1989 protesters may never be vindicated. The June 4th crackdown was a watershed moment for many Hong Kongers, shaping their identity and worldview. But the city's younger residents, fresh from the 2014 Occupy movement, see little virtue in struggling for a change they believe will never come. Hong Kong remains a holdout as the only place on Chinese soil, besides Macau, where public acts of remembrance for the crackdown are legal, protected as it is by the city's special status born from Britain's deal with China to hand back sovereignty in 1997. Many local activists have long held that time and perseverance would see the truth about June 4th revealed, along with vindication for the protesters so vilified by Beijing. But, as it stands, the death toll may never be known. As Hong Kongers remain at loggerheads with the central government over democratic reform, breeding mistrust towards their northern masters, the city is facing growing cynicism, powerlessness, and resignation to the idea that Beijing may never yield to pressures to address the crackdown or to public aspirations for democracy. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service released the results of a March workshop with academics. The report is called Rethinking Security, China and the Age of Strategic Rivalry. The executive summary says, in part, that China's growing influence is a delicate puzzle for the international community, which must welcome a transformed power without acquiescing in the destruction of the global diplomatic infrastructure. China's aggressive diplomacy and insistence on asymmetrical trade are particularly challenging for countries like Canada, which seek mutually positive trade relationships. Beijing still faces considerable hurdles. With the abolition of the two-term limit on the presidency, Xi Jinping will guide China for the foreseeable future. Authoritarian rule facilitates determined action, but this can translate into decreased sensitivity to criticism, vulnerability to corruption, and a restricted flow of information vital to sound decision-making. The intermingling of private and public economic enterprises has led to inefficiency and corruption that persist. One of the many fluctuating variables defining the new global system, China's continued rise is not inevitable and may yet elicit international action both to contain and accommodate its ambitions. For now, its dominance strategy appears relentless and irresistible. And in the UBC, Zach Vachera reports, "The Lonely Goddess, a lost memory of Tiananmen, hides in plain sight on UBC campus." The goddess of democracy is not a beautiful statue. Standing alone between Brock Hall and the nest, the goddess' gypsum and marble frame is yellowed, her features roughly sculptured. To her left is a pallet holding what used to be a wreath. At her base is a bouquet of rotted flowers wrapped in clear plastic. Every June 4th, mourners lay flowers here to pay respects to the victims of the Tiananmen Square massacre of 1989, where pro-democracy demonstrators were killed by Chinese soldiers. The original goddess of democracy was over six times this statue's size, a 10-meter-high monolith of styrofoam and plastic-soaked rags. She was created in secret by students at the Beijing Academy of Fine Arts, a symbol of the fight for expanded democracy. When the tanks came, she was obliterated. In a 1990 letter to then-UBC President Dr. David Strangway, Chinese Consul General An Wenbin called the statue an attempt to interfere into China's internal affairs and of hostility towards the Chinese people. Strangway wrote back to Wenbin. He said, "The university will not interfere in a student activity taken in sympathy with fellow students around the world." And these were some of the stories in the Breaker.news this week. A notorious Richmond mansion has sold, the farmland mansion on Sidaway Road that operated as an illegal casino. The Director of Civil Forfeiture applied to BC Supreme Court last year to seize the $5.1 million mansion on 2 acres. The $2.4 million net proceeds of the sale are held by the courts pending resolution of the lawsuit. The new owner is Megan Martin, who lives at a $7.7 million mansion in Southwest Vancouver. The Gaming Policy and Enforcement Branch's annual report says there were almost 1,900 suspicious cash transaction incident reports last year, compared with 2,300 the year before. There were 260 charges and warnings during the year, up by 2 from the year before. The release of the $200,000 March 31st submitted report on money laundering at Vancouver casinos by expert Peter German has been delayed yet again. Meanwhile, the gambling regulator is still hiring for officers to be stationed at Vancouver's Big Five casinos. Last December, NDP Attorney General David Eby revealed that there was minimal coverage during 9-to-5 weekdays and nothing after hours. In the legislature, he revealed that there would not be round-the-clock coverage. Read those stories and more in the Breaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. More than 2 months ago, Victoria's Christopher Wiley went public as a whistleblower. The data scientist revealed how Cambridge Analytica and the SCL Group accessed data from tens of millions of Facebook users to help win campaigns in the UK's Brexit referendum and the race for the White House in the US. On May 29th, Wiley testified by video link from London to the House of Commons Committee on Access to Information, Privacy, and Ethics. Victoria's aggregate IQ played a key role in data-based campaigns in the UK, US, and elsewhere. Wiley called the company that he helped set up a franchise of the SCL Group. Unlike Wiley, Aggregate IQ co-founders Zach Massingham and Jeff Sylvester got a rough ride from the committee when they appeared in Ottawa in April. Thornhill Conservative Peter Kent probed Wiley's connections to the federal Liberal Party before he went to the UK.
It's good that you could be with us here today, Mr. Wiley. You are certainly a whistleblower of some note, and your comments a couple of months ago saying it's extremely uncomfortable to consider that our democracy may have been corrupted have resonated and sparked investigations like our committee today. But I would also note that you have been over the years a participant, an architect, if you will, of the dark art of psychographic micro-targeting, and in some ways, I think, comparable to the arsonist who sets the blaze and then calls the fire department.
Ottawa West Nepean Liberal Anita Vandenbeld asked Wiley whether Aggregate IQ had misled the committee about what it was really doing with Facebook data.
Because what we were led to believe through Aggregate IQ is that it's like a Burma shave. You know, you just put a little thing on Facebook, and they were just the ones that put the ads based on some demographic data on Facebook. And if somebody, you know, waves at you on the street, or the same thing as putting a like, they were just gathering that. And that was all they were doing. But £600,000 for a single contract, just so that someone can go and target some people on Facebook, which most people, any volunteer could probably do, you're suggesting that what they were really buying was access to this aggregated database, this psychosocial profiling, the vast amount of data that was collected. That's what people were buying into.
So with respect to I appreciate your very, very Canadian political term, Burma shave. I haven't heard that in a long time, actually. You know, the thing that I find farcical about the line that, you know, all Aggregate IQ does is just, you know, click some demographics on Facebook Ad Manager, and that's it. Well, the problem that I have with that is I'm like, well, what is the value of your company then? All you're doing is something that an intern could do, right? If you know that you want to target, you know, women between 25 and 30, you can tell your intern to go and do that. So I don't understand why you would need... It would be a lot cheaper also, because you wouldn't have to be paying for all the consultancy fees.
Timmins, James Bay, NDP's Charlie Angus asked Wiley for his reaction to Massingham's claims that he did not know Cambridge Analytica.
I'm worried with Mr. Massingham. Is he taking the fall for somebody? Because why would someone totally misrepresent a simple fact like that?
I honestly, I'm actually speechless that he said that. I honestly have no idea how to explain that. I think it's unfortunate because there's a lot of information that I think is really important for people to know about, regulators to know about, legislatures to know about, and they had every opportunity to participate in you know, blowing the whistle, and they decided not to. You'll have to ask him that. I find it absolutely shocking that he didn't know what Cambridge Analytica was when it was their largest client.
Thank you, Mr. Wiley.
Beaches East York Liberal Nathaniel Erskine-Smith asked Wiley whether there was anything else that was illegal that the committee should know about.
I mean, we're talking 600,000 Canadians have been affected by just the Facebook to Kogan transfer, and that's not any other app. AIQ had an app on Facebook itself, and we don't know how much information was gleaned from that. So if we identify the players in this story, AIQ, USCL, and Cambridge Analytica, and you've worked for a fairly long period of time for Cambridge Analytica in a significant role as research director, so from what you have seen, is there other illegal conduct in this story that we should be aware of?
There may be, but I'm also aware that there are currently investigations going on where imparting that information in a public forum may interfere with a particular investigation. So if you'd like to discuss that,
so we can spend
in a non-public forum, then perhaps we could have that discussion.
So perhaps we can, Chair, we can discuss this after the second round, potentially go in camera at some point.
Ottawa Vanier Liberal Mona Fortier asked Wiley for recommended solutions for protecting citizens' privacy.
And so do you have some suggestions to make to us as a committee so that we can indeed put those protective measures in place for Canadians' personal data?
The first thing that I would say, and this is a really like straightforward example, which I was speaking about before, in the same way that you require transparency for donations and spending, require transparency for the use of information and advertising. So when a party puts out an ad online, it should have to report that. And it should also have to report who is it going to. I think that companies should do that too. I don't see why not. I think it would be healthy for people to be able to scrutinize the advertising markets online in general. The other thing that I would say is that we have to understand that this is not always going to be a data issue. The development of algorithms and artificial intelligence moving forward means that it will not always be clear whether or not there was consent.
The NDP's Charlie Angus asked Wiley how he thought the electoral process could be reinforced.
How do we come up with better mechanisms to protect democratic elections, to respond to this kind of misuse of platforms by these third-party operators?
So I think one of the biggest things that I've learned in this process is I get a lot of the same questions and see a lot of the same problems with the different legislators and governments that I've been dealing with around the world. And one of the things that I've also seen is how, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, for example, refuses to appear at any of the other committees or investigations around the world, save for Congress and his very brief meeting, if you can call it that, at the European Parliament, which means that you've got largely American companies that are exerting huge amounts of influence on the democratic systems of countries all around the world. And I think a starting point would be different legislatures and different regulators and different governments sitting down together and talking about how is it that the internet is global now, and everybody has a stake in making sure that their democracies are intact. And so what is it about the internet that needs to be looked at? What are the common questions that each country has? And working together on a common solution. And I honestly think that it may actually require a multinational approach, particularly when you see how Mark Zuckerberg refuses to engage with most countries. So I think that may have to happen at an international level.
Finally, the committee's chair, Bob Zimmer, a conservative from Prince George, Peace River, Northern Rockies, asked Christopher Wiley for his opinion on the AIQ testimony to the committee.
Have you watched the testimony of Mr. Zach Massingham and Jeff Sylvester as they appeared before our committee in Canada?
I've watched parts of it. I haven't seen the entire thing.
Okay. Is it your opinion that they were untruthful to our committee in watching that testimony?
My impression was that there were answers that felt obfuscated or that, as has been discussed now, so fantastical that it's hard to believe.
After a break, the committee meeting carried on with more questions to Wiley behind closed doors. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Win or lose in the Stanley Cup Final against the Washington Capitals, the expansion team of underdogs playing far above anyone's expectations has already captured the hearts of hockey fans around the world. The Golden Knights players are having fun, and the Golden Knights experience is redefining entertainment around the good old hockey game. There are opening ceremonies, celebrities cranking the air siren, one part ice capades, one part medieval times. It's a story of virtue in Sin City. A hockey team that helped a community heal after the horrific October 1st shooting at the Route 91 Music Festival that killed 58 innocent people. One of those was Jordan McAldoon of Maple Ridge. The team retired the number 58. The team was also one of the first to offer comfort to those affected by the horrific Humboldt Broncos bus crash. So, go Knights, go! That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for June 3rd, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 3rd, 1926, beat poet Allen Ginsberg was born in Newark, New Jersey? Ginsberg once said that whoever controls the media, the images, controls the culture. He also said that I know too much and not enough. Well, now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.